Good evening, everybody. We're going to get started tonight. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Kliotek.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Senta.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present. Thank you. So before we get started with the agenda, we do have a few citations for recent city retirees, for Carrie Ruff, Christopher Vargo, Darlene Heller, Pedro Sullivan Jr., and Stephen Douglas Jr. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing anyone's name. We do have a few of those retirees in attendance tonight. So I'll start by reading the citation for Christopher Vargo. Mr. Vargo, you're welcome to come up to the lectern or come up to receive the citation when I'm done reading it. Whatever your wishes are. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated, diligent, and talented member of the Bethlehem Fire Department for 20 years, and whereas Christopher Vargo, who started with the fire department in 2005 and retired in 2025, has during the course of his employment provided the utmost and reliable and outstanding service to the fire department and the residents of the city of Bethlehem. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the council of the city of Bethlehem that Christopher Vargo be extended the gratitude of the city of Bethlehem, which has benefited from his 2 decades of service and the special contributions he has made to promote public safety and to protect the lives and property of Bethlehem residents. Be it further resolved, now that Christopher is retired, he can relax and enjoy all that life has to offer him. And be it further resolved that Christopher be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement. For Darlene Heller, who I believe is in attendance. Ms. Heller, the same applies. You're welcome to say as much or as little as you choose to. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated and diligent member of the Department of Community and Economic Development for more than 20 years. And whereas Darlene Heller, who started with the city in 2000 and retired as Director of Planning and Zoning in 2025, as during the course of her employment provided the utmost and reliable service to her department and to the residents of the city of Bethlehem. Now therefore, be it resolved by the council of the city of Bethlehem that Darlene Heller be extended the gratitude of the city of Bethlehem, which has benefited from her more than 2 decades of service. Be it further resolved, now that Darlene is retired, she can relax and enjoy all that life has to offer. And be it further resolved that Darlene be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement.
Don't let her leave.
And our last retiree in attendance, Stephen Dupla Jr. I don't know who Mr. Dupla is. So, thank you, sir. Whereas the residents of the city of Bethlehem have been served by a dedicated and diligent member of the Department of Public Works, Grounds Bureau, for more than 20 years. And whereas Stephen Dupla Jr., who started with the city in 2002 and retired as a maintenance worker 3 in 2025, has during the course of his employment provided the utmost and reliable service to his department and to the residents of the city of Bethlehem. Now therefore, be it resolved by the council of the city of Bethlehem that Stephen Dupla Jr. be extended the gratitude of the city of Bethlehem, which has benefited from his more than 2 decades of service. Be it further resolved, now that Stephen is retired, he can relax and enjoy all that life has to offer. And be it further resolved that Stephen be extended every good wish for a long and satisfying retirement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duke.
Congratulations.
And then I don't believe Carrie Ruff or Pedro Sullivan Jr. are here in attendance. Just want to make sure before I continue. Thank you. We'll make sure they get their citations sent to them. Moving on to the approval of minutes for the February 18, 2025 council meeting. Any comment on the minutes from the last city council meeting? Have a good night, guys. Thanks for coming out. Well, there goes half our public comment.
Absolutely.
No comments on the minutes. All right. The minutes for the February 18, 2025 council meeting stand approved. We're going to move on to our public comment. For anyone who's not familiar, we have two public comment periods. The first is for any subject that's not being voted on this evening, and then the second public comment is for anything that's on the agenda. We do have a 5-minute time limit that I appreciate everyone respecting, or I'll remind you to if we have to. And for anyone following along at home, you started after 7 p.m. If you want to watch live, you can scroll ahead to the live portion of the meeting. So we only have a couple people signed up for first public comment. We'll start with Mr. Robert Virgilio.
Thank you, Council. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Robert Virgilio, 38-year resident of Bethlehem.
Mike.
Robert Virgilio, 38-year resident of Bethlehem. I also own, as you know, the granola factory, which is on the back side of the 44 East Broad Street along Walnut Street, and on the front side of the old bakeries on Long Street. This past year, we have traps, bait traps, all around our building, the bakery, to protect from rodents. It's part of our monthly inspection routine, as well as other things. This past year, we noticed there were a number of rat droppings and bites in these traps, and I then came across a couple of them in the evening, and so I was concerned that in the Long and Walnut Street area we had this problem, and it seemed like it was growing. So the first thing in trying to address this, I looked at the properties around, and there seemed to be some trash problems. So I contacted the city trash and recycling department and told them about it, and they did something about it. They contacted the parties that had sort of disregarded their trash where it was overflowing. And I'm happy to say that after 3 months, this past inspection, we didn't have any rat droppings, which is a good sign. So we'll keep monitoring it. But I wanted to give credit to Bill Santiago for doing a good job. Trash and Recycling Enforcement Department. So if anyone in the city has problems in their neighborhood, they should contact them. You have to be persistent, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are concerned about trash, and getting to specific areas can be a little, might require a little more effort. But the Trash and Recycling Enforcement people did their job. So I want to give kudos to Wade. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Virgilio. Next speaker, Mark Will Weber.
Hi, I'm Mark Will Weber, 66 West Elizabeth Avenue, representing the Direct Bar Community Citizen Consumer Watchdog Group about sewer and water issues. I meant to bring this up previously when I spoke earlier in the year, and I kept running out of time, and So I didn't get to it till now, but Mr. Clone is so good on the time thing. He's like an Eagles linebacker pouncing on a fumble if you're 10 seconds over. He'll toss you out. So, but anyway, I wanted to bring up, I don't know if anybody saw at the end of last year, I think it was in December, that State Senator Lisa Buscola had an op-ed article about the dangers of ever-rising electric costs and the stress on the grid that was going to result in higher bills for the citizen consumer. And I think, I'm pretty sure that has happened, because I keep hearing people going, oh, my electric bill's way up, and so that kind of thing did happen. And she made some very valid points on various things to look out for, and even floated some possible solutions to it. So I read it with interest, and I thought it was for the specific topic spot on. However, of course, I was conspicuous by its absence. There was no mention of Big Electric's evil twin, which is ever-rising water costs. I wonder if that's a coincidence. But at any rate, you know, the water costs always going up, too. And at the end of the day, for the citizen consumer who's constantly under stress to pay their bills, as we know, inflation hasn't really been reeled in, and we can expect that to go higher. School taxes seem to always be going up. So we're always under stress from the utilities as well. So I just want to reiterate that one way you could help the Bethlehem consumer citizen with these water costs is to address these mega bills, these bills like the one that we got hit with way back when. Now, that's Jean McNeil's red flag law that she's trying to get passed. She's brought it up again. It's going to hopefully work its way through the system and get looked at in Harrisburg. But if it does not, again, I would like to see council and the mayor push to implement this regardless. And they have the ability to do it. Somebody stopped me after one of the earlier meetings in the year and said, well, what is the red flag law? So I should probably say what it is again. Basically, what Jean McNeil, state rep, is trying to do is to get sewer and water to alert a consumer after 1 month if their bill is way up, instead of waiting the entire quarter so that the person gets zapped for 3 months of bills, okay? And that would be easy enough to do, especially with the new electric meters that are going in, smart meters. We'll see how smart they are if they could do that. So that should be done, can be done. Council, you want to do something for your constituents? Support that. The mayor should support it too. I haven't heard a word from the mayor on any of this. Where does he stand on it? So we would really like to see that happen. Mr. Boscola, I've often heard him up here say, oh, you know, we love to work with people, and you know, you can count on us to work with people. Well, as we say at the poker table, it's time to put your money where your mouth is, because he could implement this, and they may not want to because they stand to lose maybe 2/3 of their penalty revenue. So in other words, my bill, had I been alerted after a month, would have been more like $200 instead of $600. But they should do that. If it's really about not wasting water and conserving water, why aren't they going to step in and do that? Unless, of course, it's more about collecting the penalty bill and just let it roll like it is, right? So anyway, that's what we'd like to see done as elections and stuff approach. We're gonna ask people who are running for council positions where they stand on it. We're going to ask the mayor where he stands on it. Whether he'll answer it or not, I don't know. But I think you should. I've heard him pontificate for an hour on a garage. So let us know, Will, where you stand on the red flag law for McNeil. That would be a step in the right direction. Thank you.
Mr. Will Weber. Next person signed up tonight, Artie Curatola.
Hi, I'm Artie Ronnie Caratola, 813 Lawford Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I was going to talk about how I feel that really elected officials get paid way too much money all across the board. Way too much. Us veterans, we put our life on the line for $25,000 to $30,000 for a year, putting our lives in harm's way. But elected officials get paid 2-3 times the amount of military veterans who put their lives in harm's way. But I'm not going to talk about that. But actually, I want to talk about politicians who vote themselves raises and then steal our tax dollars by giving it to organizations and laundering it back to themselves. Now, most rich people who run businesses made their money from the business. If they got a tax break and didn't have to pay, guess who gave them the tax break? The same politicians who are taking the tax money and laundering it back to themselves. The big problem is the greedy politicians who give the tax breaks and take a payout for themselves. Now, that's a crime. But I'm not going to talk about that. This struck my attention. A lot of people here in the city are worried about rats and mice, the hantavirus, all the things that mice carry. Do you check out on it? The chances of you catching the hantavirus in Pennsylvania are slim to none. Maybe 1% chance. I had a mice infection, not rats, for 2 years. I didn't want to kill little guys. So I left it run across my bed and bedroom floor, not on my bed. They couldn't go on my bed. But they ran around and then all these droppings, I would clean them up without using disinfect. I'm as healthy as can be because I take all kinds of nutritional supplements to keep myself proper.
Political and government issues. Regarding council pay, I suggest more time on city government and less time on political issues. Example, in the past several months, council has clocked more time, that is hours, addressing national and international issues than city business. Just a couple of months ago, I counted 12 Bethlehem citizens in the lobby, waiting to address council on city issues, only to give up and go home because the meeting was dominated by international issues. Not a good measure of good government for council. By the way, I have personally recommended to council that public comments be limited to 3 minutes with written comments from Bethlehem citizens in the past, and I would like to encourage that again. Council should also be more responsive to comments. Support for higher pay for council should be forthcoming when such issues as the following become a regular part of the agenda. Monthly agenda items, what can we do to save taxes? Just have it on the agenda and maybe talk about it. More analysis and scrutiny on proposals that come to council from the mayor. I can share some great models of best practices on request and how that's done. More disclosure by council members regarding who they have talked with about agenda items prior to the meeting. As we watch you, that's always an interesting point. The council clicks are not serving the public interest. More fairness regarding which people who speak at council get a response and follow up action. More fair and balanced scrutiny of the mayor's proposals and initiatives. It is not apparent that that occurs, leading some to label council as too cooperative. I wrote rubber stamp here, but I won't say that. It seems likely that the era...
I am going to ask you to start drawing into a close, please.
There are many helpful examples on how to continuously improve the way public bodies manage their work. Maybe more time devoted to looking at those options is time well spent and could earn council people a pay increase. Thank you.
Was there anyone else in the wide center
I'll start in the front row and work my way back.
Hello, Valerie Newman. I have a kind of natural inclination to maybe be more agnostic about something like a pay increase for council, simply because I don't have a lot of like love for any of our political institutions, from the federal to the local. But that being said, no one could pay me to do what council does, honestly. People have asked me to run for city council. I said absolutely not. And I don't know, like, if people are looking at the amount of money that you guys are paid in a year and saying, yeah, that seems like a lot, because it's truly not. I believe someone did the calculation and said, well, if we assume you put in 20 hours a week, that's less than minimum wage, right? And as we all know, minimum wage is not enough to live on in this country. Now, I don't necessarily think that council should be awarded as like a full-time job's pay, because it's not intended to be like 40 hours a week, but I honestly think that the amount that council is being paid now is a pittance, and even the amount that it's proposed to increase to is essentially a pittance, so I actually don't have a problem with that. I do think that the mayor is being paid enough, not because I have like it out for the mayor, but I just think that the amount of the mayoral salary seems reasonable already, and I'm not sure why we need to increase it that much. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Caratola.
I'd say what I was going to say about the raising the pay, and my other thing for now, raising the pay for elected officials, council, mayor especially, look at it as you are serving city council. You're a soldier behind a desk. Figure out what your time that you put in would be to how a military veteran, a military personnel, elected officials should not be paid more than enlisted men or women. It's a slap in the face to us veterans who've been in the front lines and served our country, put our lives in harm's way, and you're getting more pay? $90,000 and some change for a mayor to get in a city is way too high. You elect yourselves to get more pay. But you're not the only ones. Higher-ups, senators, congressmen, us taxpayers are paying for their attorneys in Congress to give them raises. But let's get back to the facts. When you serve as an elected official, you are serving the people, by the people, and for the people. You are serving your nation. It's a chance to serve your country, whether it's town, city, or state. You're serving your country. As for myself, I've been coming to city council meetings for way over 35 years, since I got back from Nashville in 1975. I've been coming constantly. I feel anybody that's been served, that's been coming to these meetings for at least 20 years, should be sitting on that side, getting the same votes that the city council gets. They should have honorary membership to be in city council representatives, without pay, of course. But we should be able to vote if we've been coming that long. and especially for someone who pushed for the surveillance cameras to be in the city of Bethlehem, to eliminate a lot of crime in the city.
Careful, please bring it back to the agenda.
Okay, the agenda is elected officials are getting paid too much money. And the chances are every country. Now, I kind of disrupted my train of thought here. I was on a roll, but now I'm more like on a hot dog roll, and I'm a vegetarian. But anyway, the simple thing is, the other thing is, when I spoke, if this is okay to deviate just a little bit, when I spoke not too long ago at the United Nations gathering, and I made the suggestion the United Nations would take control of Palestine.
Mr. Caracola, you're getting off the agenda tonight. Okay. Please bring it back to something we're voting on tonight's agenda.
Okay. Well, people like myself, and many of us around that are like that, we spend our time trying to make the United States a better place to live, and we don't accept any money for it. And if by some miracle I would get elected as your next mayor, being 76, I'd be the oldest mayor that's here in the city that ever been elected in Bethlehem. But I would not want more than a military enlisted man or woman gets. I would feel not proper about that. I would feel a chance to serve my country again, as all elected officials should feel. So think about it. Upon your salary being based on the scale of how much time you put in to how much time the soldiers, the military, the enlisted men and women put in to serve your country. God bless you. Hope you make the right decision on the vote.
Thank you, Mr. Caracola. Yes, in the very back.
Sebastian Zavaruka, 341 Spring Street, Bethlehem, PA. Just to raise 3 points in about this vote for your guys' pay, I think it's really important that our politicians do have money. I think there's also something to be said for having money so that people who can't afford necessarily to volunteer their time in their life, it also creates an opportunity so that they can be representative in this chamber. And so, you know, having that be protected as to open up the opportunity for those who don't have resources, who can't afford 20 additional hours to whatever they have going on in their life, like, that's very important. Also, in regard to merit, like, I think, you know, the merit is in the vote. You are voted in as representative members. It's not a matter of being merited based off of value of the dollar. That's something that we as active members of our community have a responsibility to hold you accountable through our power of vote. And then finally, maybe off topic, correct me if I am, but I think another issue to be, in regards to this, about where the money comes from to get that vote substantiated, PAC support, I think that's a little bit more of an interesting conversation to have as far as who gets their message out there and how we limit the amount of money to get people on the ballot and their advertisement. So thank you very much.
I'll go in the very back, and then I'll continue on to my right. Sir,
Brandon on Broad Street. So you guys just raised taxes last year, and it looks like now we all know why, so that you could give yourself raises. So that was nice of you to take our money and give it to yourselves. Or you give yourselves raises just because, like, the roads are in terrible condition. Like, they're in such bad condition, you drive over and break your suspension. You're like, that's worth the raise. Or is it with all the homeless under the bridge? Like, our city's most vulnerable, still suffering. You sit up here and go, yeah, we deserve a raise. I mean, really? You guys should be ashamed of yourselves.
Sure, I'm here.
Excellent. Mayor, my name is Jim Shostall. I live at 36 West Garrison Street. I'm a third generation Bethelmite. I gotta say, this is brutal. This is really brutal. I'm addressing the issue of the parcels of 11 and 15 West Garrison Street. I live at 36 West Garrison Street. Again, I say I'm a third generation Bethelmite. I'm living in my grandmother's house. I've seen the changes from the 5 cent penny candy stores, combination of hardware stores and sporting goods stores. Bethlehem truly was a charming city. I don't know what's happened. Back in 2019, we voted on a resolution here in this council chamber to deny a variance for 11 and 15 West Garrison Street because of the various reasons that we found that were unsafe traffic. People drive their cars down West Garrison Street to avoid traffic lights on Union Boulevard. So you can imagine if they can't get through a traffic light at the top of the hill on New Street, they turn and they go flying down West Garrison Street, disregarding all the side streets. There's been so many near misses you can't imagine. But we've got little kids. And all this is brought before the council during this time, the last time they voted on it, and they shot it down because of that very reason. There's too many issues of that allowing traffic to come back and join the traffic that's already there, coming down West Garrison Street. It's not safe. They're pulling their little babies off the street so they don't get mowed down. I swear, if somebody gets hurt, and you guys don't do anything about it, it's a shame. It's a terrible shame. We have all these issues that they still deny they exist. Parking is a challenge. Oh, that's true too. Parking is a challenge. Years ago, it was easy for a person and family to have one car. Now we've got, my house is a duplex, and across the street is two duplexes just like mine, and they each have three apartments in them. And every family has to have two cars to make ends meet. So how many cars does that end up being? So in the middle of the day, you may find a parking space. More often than not, you're coming home from that at night, and you're driving past your house because there's no parking space on that block, and going back around, looping back around to get a place to park. And I've seen brand new families coming in. There's not many who want to join us. They want to try to rezone it and cause a more apartment parking like we're doing right here with the 70 parcels that they want to change into. In closing, two things I'd like to say. Landlords are ripping up the flowers, grass and vegetables to plant cement. If you want to know what I'm talking about, drive down West Garrison Street to 42. This woman had beautiful flower arrangements. When she died, they sold her property, ripped all her flowers out. They were just gorgeous in the backyard. And they planted cement. Joni Mitchell sang in a song in the 1970s, says, "Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got until it's gone." Pay paradise and put up a parking lot. Our beautiful Bethlehem is starting to look a lot like Allentown. Thank you.
Was there anyone else in the center who wants to comment if you didn't have a chance to yet? I'll turn to the right. Was there anyone to the right? I believe I see a hand behind the lectern. If you don't mind stating your name for the record.
Hi. Paige Van Wert, 42 West Market. Thank you for listening to me tonight, Council. I'm here. Well, first, I wanted to correct a matter of fact. The city receives approximately $10 million a year from the casino. It goes directly into the general fund. I'm here to support increasing salary for council, controller, and mayor. I want to emphasize that council and controller have not seen an increase in their salary in 16 years. So figuring in cost of living increases, they're actually getting paid.
You know, aren't aware of the fact of the amount of money that casino generates for the city of Bethlehem. And I'll be honest with you, at the time that it was being voted on, I don't think a lot of people understood that without that money, this city would have been in deep harm tax-wise. When all the other cities were raising taxes substantially during that time period, because there was a recession too, very close to that, we did not have to. If you came here from Oklahoma or Nebraska or Timbuktu and you went on a tour, and this is, again, I'm probably biased because I live in Bethlehem. If you went on a tour of Allentown and Bethlehem and Easton, I think it's fair to say everybody would say Bethlehem was probably the nicer of the three cities. And then you'd probably think to yourself, wow, they got to have really high taxes, though, because it's so nice, so pretty, everyone has to move there. We're the lowest. Allentown's number one in taxes. Easton, and I'm talking school district, county, and city taxes. And I think we're the third. So it's, I've had my disagreements with the mayor. I had disagreements with Mayor Donchin. I had disagreements with my brother, who was a mayor. But I think that the people that are trying to their best, especially during budget season, we really have tried to keep our expenses down as low as possible and our tax increases down as low as possible. So I think in the 9 years I was on council, I think I voted one time for a tax increase for, I think it was like $25 for the average resident. And that was because at that time we were hurt financially and we would have had to lay off some fire and police officers. I think it was worth the $25, so I voted for a tax increase. So I just wanted to clarify that, make sure everybody's aware of it. A lot of people aren't aware of it, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. I do see a hand raised. I will note public comment has concluded. If anyone wants to speak with members of council after the meeting, I welcome you to come talk to us individually, and we're happy to share any information. Any other new business from members of council? I'll just note a couple things, and just piggybacking off what Mr. Callahan had said and Mr. Evans had noted, I did know, I just want to click, since I have our budget book with us, as I keep it with me often, that the $9.9 million is budgeted, and then if anyone wants to talk further after the council meeting or any time, to Mr. Callahan's point, and Mr. Evans, say does have it broken out, the city had done a special tax increment financing that expired a few years ago, which opened up a lot more property tax revenue coming into city coffers and the general fund, and all that is accounted for in our budgets over the year, and I'm happy to highlight sort of where you would see those upticks over the years. Just to clarify that, there was reference to a certificate of appropriateness and a presentation from an applicant as it relates to a HARB-related certificate of appropriateness. I'll restate, as I did the night of that meeting, atypical circumstance as our ordinance as it relates to those HARB certificate of appropriateness is very explicit, and that says an applicant will have an ability to address council. So that is why, you know, if there's a perception of an imbalance, HARB gives us the recommendation, they give us their narrative. Our ordinance specifically states, as it relates to HARB, not the HCC, that the applicant can address council. And just said, well, to offer my thanks to Council Vice President Leone for covering the last council meeting on short notice, as myself and my whole family was impacted by some of the bugs that were going around. So I never look forward to missing a meeting, and I surely did not look forward to being home that last one. But I thank you for covering that. Any other new business from members of council before I continue on? Thank you, everyone. So we'll move on to communications, communication 6A.
February 21st, 2025 memorandum and attached resolution from Police Chief Shelcott in support of the 2024 Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistant Grant. An application is being made to receive up to $33,577. This grant would be used to expand and update the city's intersection camera network.
I'll accept a motion and a second to schedule a public hearing on the proposed 2024 Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant for March 18th.
So moved.
I heard a motion by Councilwoman Kliatek and a second by Councilwoman Leone. If we could call the roll on the motion.
Mr. Callahan?
Yes.
Ms. Grimsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kliatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colomb?
I am also a yes. The motion passes 7-0. So a public hearing will be set for 7 p.m. on March 18th to have a public hearing about the proposal for the grant. 6B.
A February 24th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Public Works Director Mike Alcall. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with LB Construction Enterprises Incorporated of Springhouse, Pennsylvania, to provide engineering services, labor, and materials and design, and construct 60 ADA curb ramps throughout the city. Cost is $459,500, and the work is to be completed within 100 days from the notice to proceed. There are no renewals. 5 bids were received. LB Construction was determined to be the lowest bidder.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6C.
February 20, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Boscola. Mr. Boscola seeks authorization to execute an agreement with CHK Consulting Incorporated of Bethlehem to provide design, bidding, and construction administration services for replacement of the roof at the water filtration plant. Cost is $127,500, and the work is to be completed by December 31st, 2025. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10C is on the agenda. Communication 60.
February 25th, 2025, memorandum and proposed resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Memorandum seeks authorization to execute agreement with B&B Construction Group of Feasterville to provide engineering services, labor, materials to design and construct ADA curb ramps, upgrades, and mill overlay Pembroke Road from Stefco Boulevard to Woodruff Street and Elizabeth Avenue from Chelsea Street to Linden Street. The cost is $451,067.25, and the work is to be completed within 45 days from the notice to proceed. There are no renewals. 6 bids were received. G&B Construction Group was the lowest bid received.
And resolution 10D is on the agenda. Communication 6E.
February 27, 2025 memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Cott with an attached resolution and agreement for the purchase of a duty weapon by a retired officer of Bethlehem Police Department. Pursuant to the third class city code, retired officers may purchase their duty firearms at fair market value.
And resolution 10E is on the agenda tonight. 6F.
The February 25th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with LB Construction Enterprises Incorporated of Springhouse to provide engineering services, labor, and materials to design and construct 50 ADA curb ramps in conjunction with in-house paving activities throughout the city. Cost is $367,900, and the work is to be completed within 100 days from the notice to proceed. There are no renewals. 6 bids were received. LB Construction submitted the lowest one.
And resolution 10F is on the agenda. 6G.
February 25th, 2025 memorandum and proposed resolution from Director of Water and Sewer Resources, Edward Boscola. The memorandum seeks authorization to execute an agreement with J. Owen Bradley Construction Company, Incorporated of Bethlehem, to provide materials and labor to repair broken water mains at 2 locations. Cost is $416,525, and the work is to be completed within 180 days from the notice to proceed. There are no renewals. 2 bids were received from J. Owen Bradley, with J. Owen Bradley submitting the lowest bid.
Resolution 10G is on the agenda. 6H.
February 26, 2025 memorandum from Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is the American Association of University Women, Bethlehem Branch, to use the Early Schaefer Ice Rink to hold its 2025 AAUW Book Fair. Event dates are April 24th through April 28th of 2025, and the duration of the permit is March 31st through April 28th.
And resolution 10H is on the agenda tonight. 6I.
February 26, 2025 memorandum from Solicitor John F. Spurk Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. The permittee is Work to Live, LLC, doing business as Run Lehigh Valley, for use of public property specified as Main Street from River Street to Broad Street and Nevin Place right away and specified parcel along West Walnut Street. The event is the 2025 Brew to Brew Run, which will take place from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on April 12, 2025. The permit duration will be from 8 a.m. till 3 p.m. on April 12th.
And resolution 10I is on the agenda tonight. And our last communication, 6J.
The February 24th, 2025 memorandum and attached proposed ordinance from Business Administrator Eric Evans. Memorandum proposes amending Article 141 to add Tatias, Puerto Rico, as a sister city to Bethlehem.
And the ordinance will be placed on Council's March 18th agenda for first reading. Moving on to reports. Nothing to report other than our councilmanic appointment. No.
Councilmanic appointment, Martin J. Biotti, Bethlehem Library Board. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Cranston.
Before we open up to discussion, I'll just say that the appointment came from someone who had resigned who currently serves on the library board. So it opened up a vacancy, and then, as I often do, collaborated with the library leadership, and we identified someone who I thank them for their willingness to volunteer for the library board, and that's where the appointment comes from. Any other discussion? Councilman Laird?
Just a note that I had the pleasure of working at times with Mr. Beauty in my role volunteering with the food co-op over the years, and am glad to see his name come before us as a willing volunteer.
Okay. Any other discussion from members of council?
I just want to thank Mr. Hunt for his service on the board. I'm pleased to be having joined the board. Got to briefly meet him before he needed to step off, so.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the appointment? Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cranston Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. The appointment passes 7-0. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you. A couple things. One is just a couple comments to follow up on what Mr. Callahan said about the casino is that, I think that one thing that I've said many times and others have said similar to what Mr. Callahan just said is, it is important to note about what the aggregate amount of money the casino has paid in the city over the past 16 years. I forget if the casino opened in May or June of 2009, but starting in 2010, we started to receive that $10 million a year in the host fee. And at the time, our general fund budget was not what it is now. It was somewhere in the 40s or the 50s, and so it was approximately 20% of all of our revenue coming in. And absent that revenue, we would have had to make decisions that other cities have had to make. Mr. Callahan referenced them. Is as I've said many times, we're not only the only city in the Lehigh Valley that hasn't earned income tax of 1%. We're the only city out of the top 10 in population across Pennsylvania that's been able to maintain that 1%. Part of that is because we've had the host fee. So the millage rate is higher in Allentown, it's higher in Easton. But also, whether or not you've ever been to the casino or not, there would be no Steel Stacks, there would be no Hoover Mason Trestle, there would be no Levitt Pavilion, there would be none of those things without the TIF that helped to create the casino. And then when the TIF ran out, and I was asking Mr. Evans about this, we don't work for the school district, but I mean, their single property tax payment from Wind Creek is like $4 million. So every year this goes on, we continue to get these funds in a way, and I continue to be amazed that somehow that story, no matter how many times people tell it about where that money has gone to pay our police officers, to pay our firefighters, we could tell you the story about what the deserved growth is within those two departments over the last 15 years. It's tied to the idea that we've had a casino and that it's been the anchor down there. So I just wanted to echo Mr. Callahan's comments tonight, and I appreciate, we always appreciate when people are willing to put information out there that fights back against misinformation that's out there, because it helps to tell the story. So thank you for doing that, Mr. Callahan. We appreciate that. Just a couple comments. I believe Mr. Hackett left, but I do just want to make a couple comments about Ms. Heller, who retired. Ms. Heller is one of the reasons why Bethlehem is the place that people want to be, that they want to live in. And, the biggest compliment I give Darlene is 20 years ago when I started paying attention when I got out of college, she was often one of the only people in meetings talking about walkability and bikeability and live, work, and play, and how do we make sure that we balance out development with the idea that we need to be able to protect some of our history, and talking about the experience of walking and all these type of things. And she really helped in this place, in City Hall, to create a culture by which, if she was the only voice when she started working for the city talking about that, she was one of many voices when she retired. And Mr. Hackett said something along the lines of, how could you let her go? Trust me when I tell you, I think I have talked her out of going many times in the past couple of years. And we could not be more grateful for all of the work that she's done. Between her work for four different mayors and Mr. Alcohol's work for four different mayors, between Public Works and the Planning Department, a lot of the projects that people in this room love or have come to define Bethlehem, including places like the Greenway, are because of the work that they have done. We are going to miss Darlene, but I think fundamentally the culture of the city of Bethlehem and thinking about how it's not just how do you get from point A to point B in your car as easily as possible, but also what about neighborhoods, what about walking, what do one-way streets do, how do we just bring more vibrancy? She was center to that. And, you know, I think one of the things I learned over the years was that in the last 20 years, you know, the last, you know, three plus change that I've been here, before that, you know, she did not always, her point of view, and I wish she was here to hear this, like her point of view did not always carry the day with every administration. And when I got here, I basically said to Darlene, it's like, I basically think you're right all the time, and I want to support you, and we're going to build a department and build development ideas around the fact that you know what you're talking about, you've really led in this way, and I just want to thank her for her incredible contributions to the city. She lives in the city, she is living in the West Side, she'll still be around, but, you know, she's been getting many congratulations, and I think all of us, when we think about what makes us different, what makes Bethlehem what it is, and also a lot of things that we have planned going in the future, her fingerprints are all over them, so I wanted to thank Darlene for that. Just a couple of things. One is I did want to make an announcement for Chief Kant. Some of you may have seen.
At a Finance Committee meeting on February 24th, following discussion and comments, as was mentioned earlier, the increases proposed in my memo were unanimously voted forward for discussion at tonight's meeting. I did take into consideration some inquiries, though, that were made at that meeting, and I have prepared one further amendment to propose tonight, which my colleagues see in front of them, and I will discuss shortly. Of course, I'm most intimately aware of the role and demands of being a council person. It became clear to me not long after my own election to council that an annual compensation level of $7,100 could be a barrier to some qualified candidates. It's been mentioned tonight. It's not uncommon that we spend 10 to 20 hours on top of our full-time work, potentially. What if I were a single parent, someone juggling multiple jobs? Would this role be available to me? I asked myself that question many times over the years, and the subject of raises were brought up by members of the public, unexpected members of the public, to be honest, at I think every budget meeting that I have participated in. And the discomfort of the situation prevented anyone from addressing it until now. Again, I understand that. But the time demands of this work are significant. A dedicated council member not only attends bi-monthly meetings, but spends hours and hours of prep and research, engages with constituents, meets with members of the administration, attends committee meetings, community meetings, represents the city at multiple events, and on and on. I could go on. Council's salary has remained the same since 2009, and this is a modest proposed increase that at least helps ensure that serving on this body is a somewhat more viable option for a broader range of our constituents. I want this privilege to be available to more residents of Bethlehem. City controller, as you know, is a highly specialized position. It's vital to maintaining the financial health and transparency of our city's finances. We've all been grateful up here many times for the careful eye of our controller, and anyone who sits in that role in the future will hold that same responsibility. The mayor's compensation rate has not increased in 12 years. A quick scan of the budget book will indicate that all six department heads and dozens of other city employees do make significantly more than our mayor, who is responsible for and accountable to all 78,000 residents of Bethlehem. At the February 24th Finance Committee meeting, an inquiry was made as to whether these increases, which in total equal just over $39,000, can be applied to the budget incrementally, with a smaller increase for each council member, for controller and mayor, taking effect over a four-year period. I did seek Solicitor Stewart's legal opinion on the matter, and she clarified that state statute does not allow for incremental increases for council or controller. But I will mention, as was also mentioned earlier, that a naturally staggered increase will apply to council, that even without an incremental yearly increase, as the next election cycle involves just 4 seats on council, and an increase for the remaining three seats would not take effect until 2028, after the following election cycle. Solicitor Stewart has indicated, however, that it is permissible to apply annual increases to the mayoral salary, and so in response to the Finance Committee request, I have proposed a new structure that you see before you this evening, which breaks the original increase for the mayoral salary into 4 annual and equal steps of $1,875 per year. I'll close by reiterating the unusual position that we're in and the potentially uncomfortable nature of being in this position, specifically mine, having presented it. But just because it's uncomfortable doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do. I'm here to advocate for a more fair wage. I'm happy to hear others' thoughts, and I look forward to settling on a more fair compensation for those who will inhabit these seats and serve Bethlehem in the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman Wilhelm. So I'm going to open it up to discussion. One thing I'll ask, though, is because we are going to, they are separate ordinance amendments, so we'll go in order. 9A is for council and council president salaries, 9B is for controller, and 9C is for mayor. I will turn to the administration for input at appropriate times, given the nature of the budget and the mayor's salary as we get there. But I would like to keep discussion to each individual as much as possible. There's gonna be some overlap, of course, but as we discuss them one by one. So we are on discussion right now for council and council president salaries. Any discussion from members of council as it relates to what's proposed from Councilwoman Wilhelm? I'll start with Councilwoman Leo.
Sure, let's get the ball rolling on this one. I have thoughts, so many thoughts. I'm only gonna be able to articulate a couple, and then I'm gonna hope that council chimes in so I can keep things flowing in my head. I'm very grateful to Councilwoman Wilhelm and the members of the public that brought up that this is a cost prohibitive job. This isn't like money, and it's not incentivizing from money, but it is cost prohibitive. It absolutely is. Like, you have to have a certain level of stability in order to serve on this council, because you do give up so much of your time. And I've said this before, it is a privilege and it is an honor, but it's also financially unavailable to entire areas of the community that have input that is extremely important for us to hear. And like, I don't understand how that's not something that is settling with people, because not everybody in the community could serve here, but everybody in the community exists in the city, and most people that exist in the city cannot serve here. I know I'm being circular here, but it's just, we want people who cannot afford childcare to sit here and say that they cannot afford childcare. We want people who are talking about affordable housing because they're worried because they have to live outside of the city, or they have to move, they can't afford groceries. We want them to sit here and talk about their experiences, and they can't sit here if we can't provide any kind of compensation that would allow for some kind of buffer, whether it's childcare, whether it's shifting hours, for whatever reason. So it absolutely is a cost prohibitive job. And if we're talking about increasing accessibility, if we're talking about increasing people's voices, if we're talking about building a Bethlehem for everybody, we need to look at why this job is so cost prohibitive. It can't just be people who are financially stable or who are business owners. And I get that, like, I can kind of hear the classist conversation, but if you can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps, maybe you shouldn't be making decisions. And I get that. I hear it, I don't get it. But like, most people in the city are struggling financially, and we need to hear from them. So I guess miss me with that. I do have some questions. Thank you for looking into the non-incremental, like the incremental increases, I get that. Is there any way that we could just build an ordinance that does this so that it is not council, like like a cost of living adjustment thing, maybe not specifically those words, but just every few years this is looked at and adjusted, because this is going to continue to be an issue for every council over and over and over again.
Is that question against?
Yes, sorry. So
I just want to make sure before I speak. I just want to provide some legal background for how this works, how this process works, which has been touched upon, but I want to make sure that we have some clarity and some understanding. Under Article 3, Section 27 of the Pennsylvania Constitution, no ordinance can be passed to increase or decrease the salary of a public officer after their election or appointment. That's why we have the deadlines that we do for passing salary ordinances, and that's why we're here tonight. With regard to the mayor, the control of all elected officials, the provisions of the third class city code indicate that ordinances have to be passed if salaries are going to be increased or decreased not less than 2 days before the last day fixed by law for candidates to withdraw their names for nominating petitions. So what does that mean? Essentially, what that means is that before we know who the final pool of candidates are for this election season, council has to have passed ordinances if they're going to change compensation. And then how does that apply? In the case of a controller, because of the constitutional provision in Article 3, Section 27, it's March, you say, okay, the controller is going to receive a salary of X as of January 1st, 2026, when the newly elected controller takes office. That salary cannot change for the term of that controller's term. The same thing with council. So you, and that goes back to the increments. You can't incrementally raise. You can't say, okay, well, when they start in 2026, they can get this much, in 2027 that much, because it's precluded by the Pennsylvania Constitution. The same thing applies to council members. So you set the compensation for the different years. However, the rate of compensation that you set for that year is only going to be received by those council members who are newly elected or re-elected, because the compensation of a sitting member of council cannot be raised during their term. So you can say, you know, in 2026 it's going to be this, in 2027 it's going to be that, in 2028 it's going to be that, but it only will be received by anyone who is newly elected or re-elected as of the beginning of that year, if that makes sense. Now, the mayor's a little different, because Section 11208 of the Third Class City Code that deals with the salary of the mayor provides that the compensation to be received by the mayor shall not be increased or diminished after the mayor's election unless the increase or decrease was included in an ordinance enacted, again, not less than 2 days before the last day for candidates to withdraw their nominating petitions. So you can, as far as the mayor is concerned, craft an ordinance that sets a rate and increases that rate during that mayor's term. So that's why that looks a little different than the controller and then the council, because it's provided for in the third class city code. Right. Clear to me, but it's probably clear as mud to everyone else.
No, I think I'm tracking. I have a couple of questions. I'm going to have questions about the mayor's salary, but not right now. So basically, what I'm hearing is there's no way that, I mean, obviously there's been brought up that people are seeking re-election. There's no way that we could kick this out to November and vote on this, because we would be voting, even if we were voting, like, gotcha.
Correct.
Gotcha.
It needs, if an ordinance is going to be passed to raise salaries or decrease salaries for January 1st, 2026. It needs to be passed in March.
So with salaries set by ordinance, say we, for conversation's sake, say we did this. If next year we look at the budget and we're like, this ain't flying, can we pull council salary back then?
You can pass another ordinance to adjust salaries, but again, the changes wouldn't apply until somebody would be newly elected or re-elected to office. So again, it's not going to apply to sitting council members.
All right, gotta think. Okay.
Any other discussion? Councilman Laird.
Echoing what the other councilwomen have stated already, I do recognize that serving on city council is an honor. It's a voluntary responsibility, and it is service. Also requires all of the time and sacrifice and all of the things that were stated before. I would hope that that's not news to anyone. Volunteering is a privilege that so many can't afford, and I am also recognizing that I am very fortunate to be able to volunteer my time and talents in areas that there are no wages or stipends for, as well as for city council where there is a small stipend wage for each year. And that small amount of compensation right now, when we look at anything, the prices have gone so far up since 2009, was it, that they were last raised? It's a fairly logical argument, I would think, to make. And while this change doesn't affect the current members unless they're reelected, it's long overdue, and it sets a precedent for even basic valuing of the work of future councils. I think that I do have some questions, one particular one, but I think overall it's a reasonable step to ensure that public service remains accessible and sustainable. And I do also think that the school board should be paid, but again, that's not our purview on council. My biggest question right now is, I think that Councilwoman Leone had maybe started to ask it, but I didn't catch the answer of, can we require in ordinance that this stipend or salary is reviewed on some regular cycle? So that every, it's a 4-year term, that every fourth year it's reviewed, so that it's just automatically in the cycle and it doesn't go as long as it has without even being discussed.
I don't know that would be precluded by law. In terms of operation, I don't know that I would, whether or not I would recommend it. Review is a pretty broad term, right? So there's nothing I think that would preclude it, and it might help keep things at the fore and being looked at on a consistent basis, whether or not action would be taken.
So I just want to comment on that, Councilwoman Laird. So this whole action came about from a memo that I circulated to all members of council that Mr. Miller reminded me, and whether I was council president or not, 4 years ago, it was missed. So because of these timelines that Attorney Stewart said, that you have to, it doesn't have to be in March, but it has to be by the end of March, a particular date, do this, Mr. Miller had reached out to me and said, there's this template for a memo that's typically circulated. He cited a year which predates most members of council being on council. I was on council. I didn't even remember it, to be honest with you, because we probably just ignored it, as somebody could say if they want to review it or propose an amendment or anything like that. That was that was probably 4 or 8 years ago or something like that. So then 4 years ago it was overlooked, and now so it's not necessarily codified in an ordinance, but the clerk's office does have
in their just procedural notes something to remind the council president, hey, council should circulate this memo to remind everybody if you want to visit these increases to do it. So that's where it inspired, that's where this came from. Everyone will remember I sent a memo internally to all members of council, and then Councilman Wilhelm responded to that saying, yes, I would like to take a look at this.
Okay, so there is some workflow established. My other question would be just to have it in our minutes and whatnot. What would, looking at the council, increase if it were to pass? What would the impact on next year's budget be in sum?
Are
you asking just for council?
Just for council, the one that we're looking at right now, council president of council, the sum increase for next year's budget.
$14,200.
Okay.
I'll just remind everyone for the sake of following along, that's based on there are four council seats up for vote, so there will be four people, either new members sworn in or some combination of new members and reelected members, and I'm termed out at the end of this year as council president, so that would apply to whoever the next council president is also, whether they're someone reelected or an incumbent who becomes council president. I think we'd have to address that at that time. Any other discussion from members of council? I'll start with Councilman Cramsey Smith and then go to Councilman Kulta.
I have two questions for Solicitor Sewer. So just so I'm clear, then for the council part of it, if there are people that are elected next year that are new, never on council, then if this passes, they will start with the increase, right? And then the people that have maybe been on council will stay at the same salary. The current people that were not up for re-election, right?
Right. Anybody re-elected or anybody newly elected would receive the salary. Incumbents would not receive the salary increase.
And has it ever been the case, or is it legally possible, to put something like this on a referendum and let the people decide?
The statutes speak to these matters being addressed by council.
So it's not legally possible to do a referendum, and never has happened, correct?
There's no reference to referendums in relevant statutes.
Okay, thank you. Well, I appreciate all the comments and Councilwoman Wilhelm for bringing it forward, and I understand it is many years since there's an increase for mayor and council and the controller. I know at our committee meeting, I asked Mr. Evans, you know, if this came through, how would we pay for it? And the answer was he didn't know at that point. We don't have money set aside in the budget. We have to find the money, and that was very concerning to me. It's unique because most people do not get to vote for their own salary increase, and we're in a unique position for sure. The one thing I have a couple concerns with this is I think timing, again, it's just bad timing because I look at what's going on at the federal level, and there's so much economic uncertainty, and I'm afraid that it's really could end up pretty significantly adversely affecting those in the community. And then I just wonder about, you know, how could we, I don't want to adversely affect anyone economically by giving pay raises at this point in time. That's a real concern for me. And I know that it makes sense, like Councilwoman Leon had some good points about some people aren't able to do this because they have other expenses, and that's also a good point to consider. But overall, I just feel that right now, there's so many unknowns economically, and there's a lot of scary stuff out there for people economically because of what's happening. And I do feel it is an honor, and I feel that it is feel more of a duty for me. I certainly am not doing this for the money, as I'm sure no one is in this room at this point. But at this point in time, I'll be voting no for all the raises because of my concerns where we are at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Quiatek.
Thank you. In the interest of accuracy, I know that we corrected the record on the casino funds, but I also wanted to mention that all of our first responders have collective bargaining agreements that include, I think they're all 3% now. One of them was 4% the first year, and now they're all 3%. Is that correct?
I believe they're four-year contracts, and there was one 4% and three 3%.
So right. That's correct, Eric.
Yes.
Right. So I just didn't want anyone to think that if we vote to provide an increase in salary for the next term of city council, whoever those four people might be, that we were neglecting our first responders or anyone. In fact, our administrative staff, everyone basically in the city government has increases. Yes.
And just also the 3% doesn't include obviously overtime opportunities, which exist in many departments, not just our public safety departments, but other departments as well. So like when we talk about what salaries are as far as city employees, there's like the salary that we necessarily see within the budget, but they also have overtime opportunities as well. And that rate changes as far as collective bargaining agreements are concerned as well. I just wanted to...
Thank you for pointing that out. I really appreciate it. That was the only thing that I really, and I think a lot of my questions just in terms of about the statute and all of those things. And Mr. Evans might not have been able to answer the question about where the funds would come from, and again, pointing out that it's $14,200 on what is the total of our operating budget?
It's over $100 million.
Yeah, it's
$112. On $112 million operating budget. The fact of the matter is that we have a budget process every year, where this is not a mid-year raise. Again, it wouldn't happen until January of 2026, which means that if we $14,200 were to be added into the budget, that would be part of the budget process where we would look at all of our budget lines as we do every year, find the resources. It is a very scary time. I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm terrified every day. So just so everybody knows that, the worry's not always okay. But at the same time, I really do appreciate Councilwoman Wilhelm kind of having the guts to say, hey, this is awkward and hard, but sometimes we have to do awkward, hard things for the good of the order. So I appreciate you, Councilwoman Wilhelm. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council?
I think my biggest hesitation with this is just the fact that this one is the 4 instead of the 3. Like, you would have to make room for the four increase as opposed to the 3 increase. I know we're considering other increases as well that I would like to see passed. So I know it's only pennies on the dollar, but I wish it was 3 council members as opposed to the 4 council members up for re-election. That's my biggest hesitation.
Understood.
Wait, I have another question for the solicitor.
Go ahead.
If we're seeking re-election, are we within our right to abstain from this vote?
My recommendation would be that you should vote, because again, the way statutes are crafted it's to prevent any self-interest from being involved in the process. That's it. It's your decision.
So I guess, is it fair to say what you mean is there's no guarantee anyone voting today is going to ever see these, depending on election outcomes?
Correct.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? So I'll just make a couple points. First, I have a question for Mr. Evans as it relates to, I mean, we'll talk about them as a whole, the, I know we're talking about council right now, but just to save you the time in revisiting these as we go through, if council adopts what's been proposed and potentially an amendment to stagger any kind of mayoral salary, that amounts to a little over $23,000, $23,325. What, and you could choose to kind of quantify, qualify however you want, would you say that's a significant, I mean, of course, that's money that currently doesn't exist in the budget that we would be adding for budget year 2026, not accounting for the three council members who would not be seeing it. I look at our budget book, and when we talk about you know, the history of having to raise the millage rate and things like that, it's also evident in our budget, our Act 511 taxes, earned income tax, which we alluded to earlier, which is 1%, our deed transfer tax, our mercantile tax, as examples of taxes where we don't raise necessarily the tax rate, but just through economic development, organic growth, the people's salaries going up. We've seen over, since 2021, through this year's budget year, $2.7 million increase just in our Act 511 taxes. So as we look at this total package amounting to $23,325, if adopted in any kind of, either in its entirety or partially, would you say that creates a significant budgetary challenge as we progress through the year and the budget season for you to try to look into a way to incorporate that into the 2026 budget?
You know, from a dollar, it is unfortunate the timing that is required, that we're 6 months out and you have to speak about what revenues might be and what direction might be moving 6 to 7 months from now when we're sitting at the budget hearings. $20,000 is a real number when you talk about numbers again, the tens of thousand dollars, and we take a hard look at all our discretionary spending as we can. We've also, as we talked last budget hearing, experienced significant growth organically through some of the revenue streams that lead our categories or segments of total revenue. Speaking as a percentage of the budget, as the mayor had mentioned, their general fund budget itself is over $100 million, so it's less than 0.02% of the whole budget we're speaking to. So there are options and maneuvers that we'll be able to present to put anything. When we start to build our budget, we start with those fixed numbers. We know where our debt's going to be the next couple of years. We know what the MMO, where the pension payment will be. We'll know that by September. We'll have a pretty good sense of where our medical, our three largest expenses are plugged in. There's not much we can do from that. We'll put anything else that's under contract. We have a lot of professional services or other contractual obligations, salaries included, are in there. Then we move on to the revenue side. So with all these moving parts, it's not number that gives me indigestion, we have by any means when we're talking about the numbers we do, but it's also a number I think, you know, we would always want, you know, pay the respect that's due because it's a budgetary item. So
thank you.
Turn that to your discretion with regard to the decision is.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. And then, I mean, the history's already been noted, and kind of the unique and difficult situation that council's put in, as has been alluded to, having to kind of vote for, even, you know, we'll say indirectly, because you're still voting for a potential increase for yourself. Obviously, elections have results, and some people win re-election, some people don't, some people choose to run again, some people choose not to run again. So it will create some disparity, depending on the vote outcome, in for at least 2 years, where you'll have four members under a potential new compensation structure or pay rate, and then you'll have three people under the old one. And that's just an accepted part of the process, the way it works, just reminding everyone that it's really going to depend on who comes into office next year with this. One thing I did want to note too, as we discuss whether to support this tonight or not, it's unlikely, and it's just not practical, that this would be revisited unless it's another 4 years from now. So when we talk about 16 years, probably be rounding it to an even 20 if it's something that council revisits 4 years from now. And then if there is a long-term kind of
stagnation in council salaries, well, then that $23,325, then when you incorporate the additional three members of council in a couple years, that even becomes over time a smaller percentage of the overall budget, just because you would anticipate as our tax base grows, as our revenues grow, it's just like the current salary structure. It was incorporated 16 years ago. 16 years ago, it was a bigger percentage of the overall budget, which is the way percentages work. As the overall operating budget grows, that number stays flat, where every other city employee, as they deserve, whether by union contract or just by virtue of our non-union professional employees, see whether it be a step increase or at a minimum a cost of living, things like that. So that's just something to bear in mind too, that should we choose to change it, history tells us it would stay the same for some amount of time. Obviously future councils, it's the will of council what to do, and should we decide to change it, then it, or excuse me, should council, the will of council be leave it as is, be looking at another 4 years before the clerk and whoever's president council then would circulate another memo advising to revisit this. And that's just kind of some of the practical working operations around it. Any other, and then another thing I'll just point out too, motivations are comprehensive. It's hard to say, and I listen to the comments that everyone's made tonight and previous meetings and things like that, and I never like painting with a broad brush, because you don't know. Some people may run for council. I mean, I would say with confidence, everyone runs out of motivation for service, but those are the people who run.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Nay. So it passes 5-2. Moving on, 9D.
Ordinance amending Part 13 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, as amended, known as the Zoning Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, by amending the city zoning map. Bill number 19, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Cramsey Smith.
Discussion? Councilwoman Laird?
Yes, so since this request came before us, I've spent a lot of time on this topic. Zoning, I think, is a really significant decision that impacts both our community and our trust in the development process. So the applicant in this case stated in various meetings and in public hearing that a lot of relationships have been built, conversations took place with affected residents, to the point that they believed that's why residents did not come speak out against the proposal at public hearing. On the flip side, we've heard some tenants and neighbors share concerns that they didn't feel consulted or engaged in a transparent process so far. So I don't see my job as to take a side in that regard, but I think it is part of my role on council to help ensure that all parties have a clear opportunity to be heard on both sides and understood in the decision process. In the Planning Commission meeting, the applicant's attorney stated that he believed the previous rezoning attempt didn't pass, I believe it was a 4-3 vote, because a previous tenant of the previous owner got neighbors organized and they came out and spoke at public meeting, and quote, sometimes like public bodies do, they are swayed by public comment at the time. So yes, public bodies are indeed influenced, as they should be, by authentic viewpoints from constituents, but also by a whole lot of other factors. There's data, there's nuanced legislation to look at, there's nuanced development throughout our communities that we need to consider. I think that community engagement, transparency, and trust are really critical in a project like this, especially when we're asked to consider a conceptual plan that hinges on the decision that we're looking at in terms of this zoning. But there's no guarantee, because they are conceptual plans, that that's going to be the end result. So there's a lot of trust involved in this process. So I think that we need to take the time to ensure that the communication is not only clear and open, but also verified, and make it before making a decision I think it's reasonable for us to allow some more time for some sort of facilitated conversations between the developer and the residents in the area, the neighborhood, so that everyone has a chance to be heard and we can move forward with confidence. I've already reached out to Northside Alive, which is an initiative in the city that I'm involved with, to confirm their willingness to help organize such a conversation if the parties would like to. And given that the applicants have firmly expressed the importance of, you know, even tonight being a positive part of the community and growing your projects and business in the city, I really hope that that could be productive conversation. So I would hold any official motion until all council members weigh in. But my intent would be to suggest that we postpone the first vote on this matter until we're able to ensure that there's been engagement for everybody to feel heard.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Yeah, so I think the number one issue I think that I hear the mayor talk about it, and a lot of other people on council talk about it, is housing affordability, and not only the affordability of to buy a home, but also to rent a apartment home. This is my opinion. I think the crisis was born out of the COVID crisis. For 2-3 years, every factory was basically slowed down, many shut down for a period of time, other than food sources. We saw the issue with parts and on every assembly line on new cars, less cars coming off the assembly line because there was a lot of workers that were quarantined for 10 days at a time. And because of this, over a period of 2 years of COVID, the production of cars drastically slowed down. And what happened? Used cars were astronomically out of range. I had a son, he had a 3-year or 4-year-old Jeep. He ended up making more money on it than he and sold it for more than what he bought it. And he had 40,000 miles on it. It's unheard of. And the same exact thing happened with housing. Housing starts were down. Every building material that you could imagine supply and demand. If there's less wood being produced in the factories, less vinyl, siding, insulation, tubing, electrical works, everything was slowed down, and there was less of everything on the market. It's supply and demand, prices went up for housing, and including rents, astronomically. We're not going to see the end of this, or the housing market come down and rental prices decrease until we get more homes on the market. The number that stuck in my head that Becky Bradley and the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission said, I think it was like 6,000, 6,000 or 7,000. Is that right? About right, Ms. Kahn?
7,000.
Just for the valley. So one of our major jobs is to help the affordability issue. We're not going to change that unless we put more units on the market. That's the bottom line, supply and demand. And I know the argument, well, they're all high-end condos or they're high-end rentals. That's true. But there's also what I call the elevator effect. When kids come out of college every year, for 3 years of COVID, kids are coming out of college. A lot of them don't want to move back with their parents. They want their own independence. They're not moving into a high-end condo or a high-end rental property. They're moving into, like I did and probably everybody else did, they move into something, you know, basically like a frat house with you and a few friends, and you're sharing rent. Is it the nicest place? No. Is that, you know, some of them don't have air conditioners, you know? But they're not the nicest place, but it's a roof over your head, and you're an independent individual. And after 4 or 5 years, you move up, you know, to a nicer rental, maybe a mid-level rental, a little bit nicer, you know. After 3-4 years, you make a little bit more money. You either go and you purchase your first home, or you move up into something like 5, 10, 6, 10 flats. The people that are moving in 5, 10 flats, 6, 10 flats, they're not college kids coming out of college. they're $2,000 a unit for rentals. They're usually higher-end people who have disposable income who want to live and play in, thankfully, our beautiful city. So my end is to get more rental units out on the market. Now, what's the benefits of this project? I had a few residents that they emailed me, some called me, and I tried to explain to them, listen, the people who purchased these lots, I think there's 15 in total, spent a lot of money purchasing these individual properties over a long period of time. They want to recoup their costs and make a little bit of profit on it. That's the American way. So the bottom line is this, with or without us approving lot 11 and 15, they're building, they need 70 units. That's the number that they came up with, that they need to build in order to recoup their costs and can make it profitable, 70 units. They don't need, without us changing the zoning on lot 11 and 15, they're building 70 units. So if they don't get the zoning change, they have to go to 6 floors versus 5 floors. If we give them the zoning change, they can do it with 5 floors. But if they go, if they don't get the zoning change amendment, they now have to go to a 6th floor because they have less space on the ground. Everybody with me? If they go to a 6th story, that's exactly what everybody that I spoke to, they don't want. They want to put the smallest building possible. So if we vote for it, it's a 5-story building. If we don't vote for it, it's a 6-story building. If we vote for it, there's more parking space for that 5-story building. If we don't vote for it, there's less parking space because they have less space on the ground. So if we don't vote for it, higher building, less parking spots. And because they have to go to a 6th floor, a 6-story building to get to 70 units, that's the number they need. And it's getting built, 70 units is getting built with or without us. We have no right at this point. They, by right, have the right to build 70 units or more. They can go up to, I think it's 150 feet by law. They're zoning right now, and they can go to 150 feet. That's like 13 stories. They're asking to go 5. If they don't get this, they're going to 6. But if they go to 6, less parking. If they go to 6, higher building. If they go to 6, then they have to go to what's called steel and stick. You can go 5 stories, which is wood. You go over 5 stories, you have to have steel. I don't know if any of you saw the co-op on Broad Street. They went steel the 1st floor, and then there was stick above. Because they have to go, if they go to 6 stories, we don't provide this variance. They have to go to 6 stories. Which means they have to spend more money on the steel and the construction of a 6-story building versus a 5-story. By using that extra money, or having to spend that extra money, they have less money for the balconies and for the outside facade. So we get, by not voting for it, we get a taller building, less parking on their site, which means more parking out on the street, and we get as not a nice of a building because they don't have the extra money to spend on the facade for the balconies. If you looked at the two pictures, regardless of the height of the building, there's no question you'd go with option A, which I call the 5-story, giving them the variance. So my whole thought process in this is, and everybody that I talk to, they want the shortest building possible. You have to vote for it if you want that. Did you know that? No, I didn't. Thank you. There's less parking was the number two issue. Well, we have to vote for it in order for them to get more parking space. If we don't vote for it, there's less parking space underneath, which means there's more people parking out on the street. You don't want that, right? No. So when I walked through it with everybody that I talked to said, I get it. And it puts us in a very difficult position, to be honest with you, because it makes it look like we're going against the will of the people by building this building, when by right, the owner can go to 13 stories, 150 feet. So I believe them when they went and they talked to a lot of the residents. Did they talk to everybody? No, I don't think so. But from what I am told, the few people that I did talk to, they did have discussions with them, and they understood why they were going to five, why they want to go to five stories versus six. So based on that, what are the other positives of it? The construction of the building alone is going to, they're going to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars more than the current properties are right there now to the city in taxes. Hundreds of thousands of dollars more to the school district in taxes, and hundreds of thousands of dollars more to the county in taxes. What else is a benefit of it? Well, you're getting a lot of people, 70 people, and I'm going to presume these units are not going to be cheap to rent. You're getting people downtown walking the streets of Bethlehem with disposable income. Because anybody can afford $1,800 or $1,600. I don't know the price range is, but I'm going to assume for a two-bedroom, it's going to be over $2,000 a month. People that are moving in those places like 510 flats, 610 flats, and all these other places downtown, there are a lot of more doctors that are here on their residency. They're engineers. My son just moved in one. He moved out of my house. Why, I have no idea. He was living there for free. But and that's what they want. They want to live in nice housing. And that's their choice. That's it's an American thing. You know, that's their choice to live where they want to live. But everything that I see by granting this is a positive. Everything that I see by not granting it is more of a negative. A higher building, more people parking out in the street. So I'm going to be supporting this because I and the people that I spoke to and I explained to them, they understood it. So, the other thing I wanted to say too is that with the increased foot traffic, that gets people hustling and bustling, living and playing and working in our downtown historic area. That's going to help all those businesses down there. Let's say you have two people per unit. That's 140 people, more people down. Going to Edge, going to Apollo, going to Brewers, going to, you know, all the different restaurants and Knobs and Knockers and all these other stores down there. It's a win-win. But it's a better win for all of us, I think, if we vote for it, because if we get a one-story less building, a better-looking building, and more parking on site versus off-site on the streets. So because of that, I will be supporting the vote for the rezoning of it. And the other thing too is if we don't vote for it, those two houses, they're coming down regardless because they can't leave them. They're going to need additional space for whatever they're doing, like a little recreation area. I don't know what they're doing with that area. But if they get the variance, with or without the variance, those two properties or buildings on those lots, they're coming down. So if you look at the whole plan and all the pros and cons, it's not even a choice. So I don't know if that's what everybody in that neighborhood wants to hear, but the people that I did speak to, they understood it. And I'd be willing to listen to anybody that showed up tonight. If you'd like to talk about it, I have all time in the world. I had three people that called my personal number. I'll give you my personal number. You can call me anytime you want. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate everybody coming out.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Councilwoman Quiette.
Thank you. First, just for clarification, we're not the Zoning Hearing Board. This is not a variance. We will be voting to actually change the zoning map in the city. That's why we have to do it, because it's part of the zoning ordinance. So what is the zoning map? Well, it's a series of boundaries. And these two spaces, 11 and 15 West Garrison, happen to be the very edge of the zoning district, the RT zoning district. There's been some conversation about over history. It was central business, and then it was changed to RT. And my reading of it is that the change to RT was done during a more intentional and focused time in our zoning history. So I actually kind of honor and respect that decision, which wasn't made all that long ago. To tie those two properties to the RT district that the whole rest of that part of West Garrison Street is tied to. So with respect to what's on those two properties right now, there are, again, naturally more affordable, more moderately priced rental units that the developers, the owners, they own them had admitted that they had made improvements to both of them from the inside. And they are quite nice outside also structurally. One of them, the brick one at 15 in particular, I think is, or I guess it's 11. Get turned around. But one of them is particularly nice and whole and complete and it looks pretty sturdy. And as I said, they made improvements to the insides of them. So they are certainly rentable in their condition. And so if we don't vote to change our zoning map and take those two properties and convert them to Central Business District, there will still be 70 apartments. That's, again, by right. Or it could be that they do build 13 stories and 150, because the truth of the matter is we don't know. Because we were presented with two concepts. They both included 70 apartments. We weren't, shown figures that showed us that there would be an economic hardship if they had to build six stories. So we don't really know what the exterior is going to look like. We were looking at concept drawings. We took them in good faith at that last meeting. But the truth of the matter is there's a lot more steps to go through before we actually know what's going to get built. But by right, they could build taller right now on those properties. So all of that is to say that the decision that's really before us is changing the boundary of this particular zone. If you have been on the ground on West Garrison Street, you do know that it is a fairly narrow one way street with parking on both sides, and that it is, it's like a lot like the block that I live on, modest homes and townhomes, a combination of row, side by side, single homes, combination of rental, owner occupied. It is a quintessential RT block. So that's where I stand on it. I'm open to Ms. Laird's concept of taking some time to further investigate, but that's where I'm at.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion from members of council? Councilwoman Leo.
I also agree with a lot of the discussion that's already been had. I like the idea of more dialogue. To Councilman Callahan's point, every person that he has discussed this with has understood, once it was thoroughly explained to them, the difference between the zoning map versus what we can and cannot do, and we cannot decide whether apartments are going there or not. That is not within council's purview. That is, if there is concern about that project, that's advocacy during the planning commission process and all that stuff, that is not a council thing. But to that point, if he's able to sway people with his conversation, then there are still people in that community that need to be swayed. So I am very agreeable to having more conversation. There was a discussion about trust. And whether intentionally or unintentionally, there was a bit of a broken trust here regarding whether or not we felt everybody in that community was reached out to. And in an attempt to repair trust, let's make sure that we're dotting our I's, crossing our T's, and do it right.
Councilwoman Wilhelm?
Just quickly, I also don't want to repeat what's been said, but I will repeat that I also had to explain to a number of folks that we're not voting on apartments or no apartments, and I think the nuanced conversation around this topic is crucial, and I also support Councilwoman Laird's suggestion that we delay. I feel like what we do by a delay is giving the developer an opportunity to set a better example and do what I certainly left last meeting feeling had been done. And so I would support a delay as well.
Any other discussion? Councilwoman Cramsey-Smith.
Thank you. This is a really difficult decision, and I met with the landowners, and I
It's difficult because, as everyone said, no matter how we vote, they're able to build the apartments. It's just a matter of, you know, if we rezoned the two on Garrison or not. And I appreciate the property owners, you know, their consideration and time and discussion. But I have serious concerns, and I'm certainly open to delaying it for discussion reasons with the community. I'm just not sure that, I guess, there's a community and the property owners willing to, you know, do that. And I'm just going to be honest, as I said before, I think I said this 6 years ago when this was up for discussion, even though we don't have much control over the whole development, I just have real serious concerns about us tearing down unique, aesthetically appealing, sound buildings and homes in our city, and it just seems like it's happening more and more, and it's just not me having a concern, because sometimes I'm like, is it me, and am I being Pollyanna, but I have so many constituents coming up to me and expressing their concern that we're losing that which makes our place special. And if we lose that which makes it special, we're going to lose a lot, especially economically, because I know people from out of town already seeing the difference, and we're going to lose that level of tourism that we want to have and increase. We're not going to have that special, unique character in the city. Talking to some people in the neighborhood, and this is a problem everywhere, but I think it's really a problem, going to be a problem here, because Garrison is such a narrow street, and I worry about the traffic, because the entrance to the garage will be on North and Garrison, and it'll be an issue for both North and Garrison, but I think really we could look at some real safety issues on Garrison, especially because of how narrow it is. Parking is always an issue. It's always an issue now. I live in a pretty dense area, and I know what parking's like for me and many others. And even if there is one parking spot for every unit, it's still not going to be enough parking, and that's going to be an issue. The other thing I think about is, you know, we talk about we need more apartments, homes, whatever, but we have two blocks away the Boyd, and they're not at capacity. I think they're at like 22% occupancy, and hopefully that will grow, but still there's vacancies there. We have the Wallace Street Garage is going to be like two, you know, three blocks away. We have Martin Tower that can have up to 1,000 units at this point in time. Right now the homes are rentals, and I would assume that the rentals are a lot more affordable than they will be once they're demolished and it's new apartments. And that makes me think again, how are we addressing the affordable housing issue and crisis if we're going to tear down homes that are rentals, owner occupied, whatever, and it's more affordable for new apartments or whatever that is going to be unaffordable? I feel like it's just all backwards. I know I don't have control, but I feel strongly for the community and our city. It would be a much better idea to take the land that is available in that area and develop that land and not tear down the buildings that exist now. Bethlehem has always felt like, to me and many others, a city with a small town feel. We have unique buildings, unique neighborhoods. We have, you know, historic character that is a draw for so many people. And again, I feel like we're going to lose it if we keep doing these kind of things and tearing down buildings and putting up high-end luxury apartments that just aren't affordable. So that's my thoughts for tonight.
Thank you, Councilwoman. I'll just note, and I'll turn it back over everybody for discussion, that as it relates to 11 and 15 West Garrison, just like any other individual properties, regardless of any vote tonight or how the votes shake out, the owner of those properties have certain property rights, which would include tearing down those buildings should they wish to. I mean, we have certain controls over with how we vote, but at the end of the day, property owners just have certain rights as it relates to raising buildings and such. I'll turn it back over to everybody. Mr. Callahan, do you want to add something?
I don't have the paperwork with me, but I don't remember what was in the what was going to go on those sites if they had to go to a sixth floor. If we didn't change the zoning, what was going there? I know there was something. Is it your property? What was going there?
So I would say I don't know if I want to break order here. And
does anybody remember what was going there? I don't. I know that the buildings came down, but they had something there. What was there?
I think
they did not have something. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was those buildings that this building went around in the idea, and it was conceptual, of course. that it was built around. There was some discussion about that they could come down. But in the plan that did not include rezoning, which should be in everybody's email, I believe, there was, the building was L-shaped around those two buildings, and it was drawn in.
No, I know that, but on the one plan where it was L-shaped, there was nothing. They had something else designed there. I don't know if it was like a garden area or what, but there was something.
I think it just showed those homes drawn in there.
And it's all conceptual.
Yes, correct.
Are you done, Mr. Kelly?
Yeah.
I just want to. So I'll go to Councilman Kwiatek again and work my way to the right.
I just wanted to say that they may have the right to demolish, but if the land continues to be in the RT, there will be, there would be, if they wanted to build something there, they would have to conform to the zone's restrictions. Did that make any sense?
Hey, perfect.
You know what I'm saying?
Councilman Laird?
Yes, so I don't think I said this when I was initially talking. I'm perfectly aware that we are not going to stop apartments from happening in some way, shape, or form on this property. That's not what this decision's about. The decision is not even about whether we like the idea of having high-end apartments in walking distance of Main Street. That's not what this is about at all. The decision is very specific, but also asks us, and in my opinion, this is really about trusting somebody, a developer that is new and that we're anticipating in the conversations I've had with the applicant. We're anticipating seeing come before council or various boards in the future as they look to do further projects. And yes, we saw two concepts. And in those two concepts, neither of which reflected the full extent of what could be done on that land. The proposed concept, including the rezoning, would be more palatable to almost anybody who looked at it. But they're concepts, and I don't think, based on my conversations with anybody, that the applicant would be going for the full, what could be done, 150 feet or whatever, on the full, and it's 9 lots, not 15. There's 15 units, 9 lots. 7 of the lots are central business, 2 are RT, right? So, but if we rezone those two, they could, right? 9 lots could go 150 feet, or 7 lots already by right can go 150 feet, or whatever the specific number is. I agree at this moment that the proposal that includes the shifting of boundary is more palatable to anybody who actually looks at that and is given the choice of you're going to have this on 7 lots or this on 9 lots. But we need to be able to, one, make sure that everybody has seen that idea. And one of the challenging factors, I think, that was faced in communicating with the neighborhood here is that when our zoning hearing letters go out, they do not go to every residential address in the area. They go to property owners, right? So property owners, some of them showed up, but a lot of the properties in that area are rentals. And a lot of the people that I spoke to are renters, not necessarily from the applicant's properties, but like in the radius that gets mailed to. They're not the recipients. The people at those addresses are not necessarily the recipient of the notice of a hearing, which is a systemic issue, I think, right? So it's, does a landlord pass on the mail that they received about a certain property to the person who lives at that address? The landlord certainly has the right to know what's happening, but I believe that so do the tenants, because we do have a lot of tenants who live in that area who have been long-time residents of the neighborhood and have a vested interest in what happens next door. So I think that like you, Mr. Callahan, the people I spoke to, right, we're dealing with people who are vested in their community, and they do understand, okay, this is what's going to happen on plan A, this is what's going to happen on plan B. My purpose in proposing that we shift this vote would be to give not only the neighborhood residents the chance to be heard, but also the applicants a better chance to be heard, to talk through the realities on both sides of what this looks like for the neighborhood. And in my perspective, I don't think that when we're looking at the potential of making a change, that I really don't think, especially if it's built on, is going to be flipped back again while it's already happened back and forth. I think it's fair to say, let's take some more time to hear people out on all sides of this issue. And I, one last thought, sorry. I am not suggesting that we kick this can months and months down the road. I'm talking a one or two meeting postponement so that there can still be action moving forward. Nobody's waiting, you know, some unduly amount of time. But so that we could hopefully have some more meaningful conversations.
So are you making a motion, Councilwoman?
Everyone has, you haven't had the chance to speak, I think.
I said what I needed to.
Okay. Then, yes, I would move that we postpone this vote for, I'm going to say, two council meetings, so that we have the chance to.
So that would be the first meeting in April. So that would be April 8th. So the motion is to postpone 9D to the April 7th council meeting for first reading, second by Councilman Callahan. Discussion on the motion to postpone. That's actually, I think I got the date wrong.
April 1st.
April 1st. It helps to be able to read a calendar at 10:47 at night. So April 1st would be the correct date. Thank you for the correction. So, but discussion,
I just wanted to clarify. So do we have like a plan though? Like is some, are there members of Northside Alive that are going to coordinate and organize with, you know, the land, the
I just confirmed with the neighborhood coordinator today that she would be willing to help. I have not gotten to relay that to the applicants. You know, that would be, and I am willing to help as somebody who does. As a volunteer role, I'm the Economic Vitality Committee Chair for Northside Alive. Certainly would involve Economic Vitality. So I would be willing to assist in facilitating any conversations, whether they're formal or informal.
Great. Any other discussion on the motion? Councilwoman Leo?
I could have said this to Councilman Laird after, but I would just ask that council be made aware so that if there are community meetings, we could be at least present for some of them, no sunshine violations here. So maybe we communicate a little bit, but just so that if there are meetings that some council members can be there and hear what they're saying.
Yes, if the intent of this postponement is to make sure that everybody can say that they've had their piece and been heard and communicated with, then certainly the meetings are going to be communicated.
So the motion that we're about to vote on is to postpone first reading of 9D to the April 1st City Council meeting. Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Motion passes 7-0. So the zoning map amendment for 11 and 15 West Garrison Street will be postponed till the April 1st City Council meeting. Moving on to resolutions, Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem in accordance with the Municipal Records Manual that the disposal of public records in the Health Bureau as set forth in Exhibit A is hereby authorized. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute agreement with LB Construction Enterprises Incorporated to provide ADA curb rails. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Cramson Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Cramson Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
Ms. Leon.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10C.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with CHA Consulting Incorporated to provide design, bidding, and construction administrative services for replacement of the roof at the water filtration plant. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Cramson Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Cramson Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
Ms. Leon.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10D.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with GMB Construction Group to provide ADA curb ramps and mill and overlay portions of Pembroke Road and Elizabeth Avenues. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Cramson Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Aye.
Ms. Cramson Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
Ms. Leon.
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10E.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement to effectuate the transfer of city-issued handgun assigned to Lieutenant Eric Waldeck, a retired city police officer. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Cramson Smith.
Discussion. Mr. Callan.
Chief Cott. What does a brand new cost? I don't need an exact number, just off the top of your head.
You're looking at about $600-$650.
All right. And so if we vote for this, it goes with the retiree who's been using this for his whole career.
Yes, sir.
And if we don't vote for it, it goes out onto the free market and could be on the street.
So that is one option. The other option is that we hold on to it in case, you know, God forbid there's a malfunction with another officer's weapon and it needs to be swapped out.
We don't do that though, right? I mean, if it doesn't get sold, it goes out to like an arms dealer.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Well, we haven't done that in the last, right? Because every single one of these has been sold to the potential officer.
Right.
So like your question is a legitimate one,
right?
But that's not the only option.
Right.
Like if this didn't go through, there's other options that we would follow rather than one potential legal option, which would be to go there. But during our administration in the last 3+ years, like nobody has not taken this, but if that was the option, it's not an A or B type of situation.
But if every handgun got voted no to sell to the officer, we wouldn't keep stockpiling handguns.
We might take a look at how much it costs to destroy them.
Right.
We would do everything that we possibly could to avoid the option of letting this gun get to a place where we would look back and be like, we didn't want this gun to get there. So we would look at, exhaust every single possible option that other cities have used on how to get rid of these guns. But like, we're not dealing with like 20,000 officers.
Right.
We're dealing with like a few retirees every year. So it would not be a situation where we're like, oh, we got too many guns in this room, we gotta get rid of some of them.
Yeah.
Like,
I just don't wanna vote against it because I don't want the potential of it going out in the market as a cheap handgun.
And that's why I interrupted Chief Cobb, because I wanted to make sure like that's not gonna happen, and that would not happen as long as we're here.
Any other discussion from members of council? Thank you, Chief Todd.
And again, I'll just remind everybody who's mentioned that these resolutions in the year, because it wasn't always custom for council to vote on this. It came up with a finding that we should be voting on them, and council in the years that we've been doing it has never voted against a retiree purchasing their duty weapon. And I wish Lieutenant Waldeck also a safe and joyful retirement.
We'll call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-1. 10-F.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with LB Construction Enterprises Incorporated to provide ADA curb ramps. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10-G.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with J. Owen Bradley Construction Company Incorporated to provide materials and labor to repair broken water mains at two locations. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. 10-H.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with the American Association of University Women Bethlehem Branch for the 2025 AAUW Book Fair. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. And final resolution 10-I.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Work to Live LLC, doing business as Run Lehigh Valley, for the 2025 Through to Brew Run event. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call roll.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Pass 7-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safe, everyone. Have a safe St. Patrick's Day. And we'll hope for nice weather.